Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, right here on the Myrtle Beach Network. It's ScaryCast Tuesday. I'm Dr. John Stemme, and we are glad to have everybody here tonight. We got great co-hosts and a really, really interesting guest. I cannot wait to hear his stories. First of all, from Houston, Texas, Kyler Smith. How you doing tonight, Kyler?
I'm doing awesome. It was a great day.
Well, that's great. I know what you mean. Mine was a pretty good day, too. Well, we're glad to have you here, and it's exciting to have you. All right, now, from Ewing, Virginia, not exactly the biggest town in the world, but it's got a lot of heart and a lot of cryptids and a lot of crazy things going on. The one and only Matt Delph. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing great. Great. Excited about the show tonight.
Well, I am, too. And speaking of the show, I'm going to let you introduce our guests. Got some UFO stories and some other cool stuff out there. So please introduce our guest tonight.
All righty. Our guest, I'd actually met in Helen, Georgia. He had spoke at a Camp Disclosure event. It was like a four-day event, and I was a speaker there. And I'd met him, I think, the first day of the event or second day. But we clicked right off the get-go. I've liked the guy ever since. He's got a lot of UFO and a little bit of experience in everything, actually. And, I like him right from the start. He's really knowledgeable, really smart, and got a lot of experience. And that's what led me to just that connection right there from the get-go. So I'd like to introduce Barry Littleton, and I'll let you take it from there.
Hey, Barry.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. Good to talk to you again, too, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the introduction.
No problem.
All right, so, Barry, I tell you what. This is Dr. John. Get us started and tell us the elements of your story you'd like for us to know about. They sound very interesting, and I love UFO stories. I really do. I got too many episodes of Missing Time and an implant in my right arm, So let's hear it, buddy.
Oh, okay. You're definitely on the level. I understand. Thank you. Well, I started off I was born somewhat awake, you know, having past life memories and things that you can't really sort out. But I started having contact at a very early age. You know, first that I can remember around 5 when strange stuff started happening, as in I started waking up not at home. And then when I was 7, I started waking up, like, in this room that was, it's like a gray room with a black table on it. And on this table, it's got things like a feather on it, this a bowl of water, and then, like, these silver balls. And the thing is, you have to, with your mind, move, like, the feather first and stir the water, and then you can start moving these balls. And I woke up several times in this room, and you couldn't see the instructor, but they're in your mind, you know, telepathically. So that was something that happened quite a bit when I was a kid. Then I had an individual that showed up and would play with me a couple of times that I wound up finding out is a non-human. But he didn't appear that way to me when we were first interacting, if that makes any sense. And other people saw him, and he didn't appear to be what he actually was, which was an insectoid. This says a lot, I think, what these beings can do consciously and what they can do through our optical nerves also to present what they actually look like here in the third dimension. So that's something to always, I think, kind of take into terms and into consideration. When I was in the 6th grade, I had an experience happen that really broke the barrier. And I had what I call childhood experiences that ranged till I was about 12, and then I stopped having experiences till around 17, and they started again. And I call those adult onset experiences. And those were different in terms of they had a lot of missing time in 4 different events that totaled 20 hours altogether. It's about four and that kind of stuff really changes your life. But anyway, back to the childhood experiences. I had this experience that I call the acid rain experience. I woke up not at home on board this craft, and that's always disconcerting, you know, to a degree when you're not at home, one, and two, the technology and all the stuff you're seeing will blow you away, and then you start having, you know, beings in your mind that are talking to you telepathically and in a telethought. It comes really with pictures, emotions, and it's not always just, you know, strictly words. But anyway, so on board this craft, I can see there's like this large screen, and there's a being floating on the right side of this screen, okay? And this being is an insectoid, and he's got on a white uniform with these like yellow sash things on it, very, very official looking. And this was the same individual that had hung out with me several times when I was a kid. He even helped me build these dams, and he stopped these kids from pushing me off a slide. So I had met him several times, but he did not appear. When he would show up, he would have this, like a Schwinn bicycle with a baseball cap and these glasses that my mother used to call these like kitty cat glasses. So he looked a little bit odd, but he was also telepathic. We were talking to each other telepathically. And at that point, at the age of 7, you don't quite realize that everybody can't do it if they try. It's not something everyone's doing. So I wasn't putting that together at first. Anyway, when I see him on board this craft, outside of the screen, there are like three other crafts. I can see two other crafts. And we're floating over what appears to be a snow-capped mountain pass, like a cascade. I never seen anything like that before. And these ships look like they're sucking up clouds into their underbellies and then emitting like a light, a green or a bluish light coming out of the body, golden sometimes. And this being that's floating on the other side over these deck plates gives me a name. Says his name sounds almost like Yandar, but I'm seeing a Z, so I say Xandar with it. And it's one of the few beings throughout all my contacts that actually gave me a name. Most of them don't have that. So he's pointing, he starts telling me, he's answering my questions telepathically before I can even formulate them. So this was a different type of telepathy, and that it made me a little bit uncomfortable. You know, and I wanted to know first, like, where are you from? What do you want? These different things. And he's telling me, go 900 million light years out past the space-time continuum. And I didn't understand what that meant. He was right, saying, well, focus on our bases that are in the third and fourth planets past Pluto, because those are bases that are jumping off points to your solar system because we have problems with the density. And at that time, you know, I'm in my mind.
Well, Barry, this is Dr. John. I would like a little bit of clarification, if you don't mind. That's very interesting.
Absolutely.
So you said they talked about a third and fourth planet past Pluto. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And to be honest, you know, I've been criticized this a bit, but I spend a lot of time in encounters making sure I'm not being deceived, one. And at that time, I believe Charon, Pluto's moon, might not have even been discovered yet. So I thought that perhaps this could be a lie. You know, and he's telling me, you haven't discovered it yet. Now, fast forward this when, I don't know, I'm in my early 30s, I'm sitting in my office, and I see this bulletin comes across that they found something called trans-Neptunian objects, which is another Kuiper belt that is outside of Pluto. Past Pluto, and there's several of these small planetoids out there that these trans-Neptunian objects, they're calling small planetoids, and they're naming them. There are like four or five of them that are really big. They're almost the size of Pluto. Anyone can look that up. So immediately when I start seeing that, it's another thing that backed up the experiences. But back to that, actually. So he's telling me this, all right, and then he starts informing me that they're having problems. The acid rain is very bad for our planet, and they're trying to reverse it and work with it, but they're having problems. And then he made reference to something I call the M&M effect, which is the metals and the microwaves in our atmosphere are very dangerous. I guess especially for beings that are non-planetary, not human, not from the Earth, very dangerous, and why some of them don't come out of these craft on this planet. So that's something that came through there, and this happened, and in the back of this room is like a power room, I want to call it that, and this is this device in the back that got a lot of responses on this. It looks like these very large crystals that our science calls quasi-crystals, and they're wrapped in what looked like something similar to copper, and they're in this a vacuum type of chamber, and they start spinning real fast, so fast I can't see them anymore. And something about these crystals, they're about, I'd say, 2.5-3 feet wide by about 9 feet tall, size of the height of a basketball goal. And they all the crystals I've seen on board these craft are illuminated inside, either a biochemical or bioluminescence is what they glow from inside. I think now seeing what our science calls it, it's called squeezed light. Anybody wants to look that up, I think that's what these are. These organic crystals create a type of squeezed light that they're harnessing. Anyway, so that was a real heavy experience. This is something that I'm consciously, physically there, especially where you can touch things. You know, that's a physical experience. Now, going forward about a week, on Fridays, I was in the sixth grade, and our teacher had us read something called Scholastic News. And on Fridays, she'd have somebody stand up there and read the main article. And I got chosen this week. And as I'm looking at this thing, I'll never forget it, on the front of the Scholastic News was a picture of the Statue of Liberty. And it was shut off as certain parts were being under construction because they were repainting it due to the acid rain. And the damage was caused by the acid rain. And when I read this, I kind of screamed it out, acid rain, because this was in this experience. I had seen this and been told of this. I never heard of it before. Or chlorofluorocarbons, any of that. Okay, so this is when these experiences go beyond just feeling like you're awake all night and not sleeping, to actually crossing to definitely being scientifically verifiable in my daily world. Okay, so that's something that really kind of rocked my world a little bit, but it also was the end of these childhood experiences until I was about 17 and they started again. And that's when they started involving missing time. And three of these experiences, somebody else was with me, you know, and then they wind up missing time too. They saw the craft, and it's odd. Something I'll say that probably a lot of your listeners might connect with, or yourself, Dr. John, is that when having these experiences, right then and there, you know, when you're face-to-face with the technology and the beings, it you know you're having this experience. But when you're away from them and away, the further you get from the event horizon, the harder it is to remember it clearly. It becomes fragmented. So then, in my case, it has a lot to do with the vibration of the beings, of the craft, and the vibration of me. They're vibrating much faster than mine. So therefore, when being there, a certain sickness, I started feeling sick a lot on these ships, and they were giving me temporal aphasia, and that is that the inside and outside of those crafts are not in the same dimension as this one, and it's hard for our bodies, I think, to survive there, you know. So anyway, going on. Going into the adult onset experiences, the first one of these that I had goes into, I was with an ex-girlfriend, and we actually went out into the country to try to meditate, what I was saying anyway, and I had an experience out there that involved seeing this craft and, you know, manifesting, seemed like it manifested over this pond, and then, you know, I'm seeing faces, I'm seeing things, and then all of a sudden I'm back in the car dealing with her again, and then it takes off around us. And suddenly we're outside of the car, and the car's turned around. And we're seeing this craft, and I'm seeing this thing morph and change from what looks like, what back in the early 90s, they used to call it, it kind of looked like a Pleiadian ship. But it changed and morphed into something that looked like, later found out that this is called a tripyramidal Merkabah, which is these, like, these only thing I could say in entertainment that looks similar to it. excuse me. In the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeve and Marlon Brando sent him to Earth in a ship that looked like this spear with these stalagmites coming out of it. So this ship turned into something that looked like that would be one of them, that ball with the stalagmites illuminating from the inside with like these rods. And there were three of them. I've actually got illustrations of this thing. It's pulsing from the inside. And I'll tell you, it's one thing to even talk about it now or understand maybe some scientific principles that could possibly be behind it. But it really blew me away. It was hard to deal with. I was obsessed for a long time trying to figure out exactly not just what was happening to me, but trying to scientific verify it. That led me on to a lifetime of research from childhood all the way through. That was the first encounter of missing time. And seeing this craft doing that, and then after standing out here watching this thing and being out of the car, we're missing 4.5 hours of time. You know, and the further away from the event horizon, like I said, it starts fading. And so you start becoming a bit obsessed with it. What happened? You know, what, like a lot of people can't really remember their dreams and aren't fully cognitive in their dreams. It feels somewhat similar to that. And without taking it too far, that was the first adult onset experience of missing time. And then with this individual, I had two others. And fortunately, that type of delusion is not shared. So they may not have been with me on the craft the whole time, but yet they saw this and the missing time and all that. Not everybody is comfortable with that stuff that happens, you know. They told somebody later on, one of us friends, that, you know, the ships, that whole thing was very, very real. I got away from them, and then I got away from him, and it stopped. But anyway, that's, and then the last one of these experiences I'd had, I was by myself, that was missing time at that age anyway. And then, you know, after that, the kind of communications changed to, people call them downloads now. I'm not comfortable with that word, but it's like an informational line that they will just give me information, will come through. So I don't have to be sleeping sometime. It could just be in the middle of the day. It could be at night. And there's distinct vibration that comes with the star intelligences when they're communicating, you know. And I'll say that I had had what kind of had me to come forward and talk about this now after having a lifetime of experiences is in 2010, I was on my way to work, and I had a really bad car accident. And I had a little 2002 Trans Am, and this thing was totaled, and with my great intelligence, I wasn't wearing my seatbelt. It was like a couple blocks from where I live. My T-tops, several of the windows in there, except for like the back window, I went to several of them. And I took 4 catastrophic traumatic brain injuries. A hematoma to the frontal lobe, a hematoma to the brain stem, hematoma to the quarter lobe, and it was called diffusal axonal, which is like shaken baby syndrome. It's a blood spotting of the brain. So on the way to the hospital, I actually died twice, and they resuscitated me, brought me back. But they told my family I was in a coma, and I went to coma for almost 2 weeks. And during this time, they told my family that I would be a lifetime vegetable, devoid of long-term life memories especially. But during this, I had a near-death experience. And when I had woke up, probably 2 weeks later, I had what they call a clearing out, which is where a brain injury patient remembers everything. It comes back. I remember who I was and everything. You know, so I was very blessed in that way. Still, I was left with this fact that I had seen these, even before I remembered who I was, I had saw these angelics, okay? And when I say the word angel, I think that might not be enough to describe these beings. In the Urantia book, the Earth book, there's a term they have called supernanophim. And supernanophim is a type of archangel that's of a different standing, but that type of high, level-wise. And these beings were pure light. Imagine like hundreds or 1,000 strands of light, corpuscles of light, like encapsulated kind of by, I'm a Star Trek guy, fellas, so I think it looked like shields kind of on the outside of this light would come to like these shields. And then outside of that, it looked like wavy lines like heat, like when you see a mirage. And these beings were absolutely regal. There was so much love coming off of them that I swear they must have been holding back, or I thought it might have even burned up my body. We wouldn't think of love being painful like that, but when you deal with maybe when it gets that close to source, what actually source love is and creator source is, I think it's something that is hard for our bodies to take. Anyway, so when I had woke up, and even before I remembered who I was, there in my mind's eye, and then when I did remember who I was, I had to deal with that, again, versus some of these extraterrestrial or star interdimensional intelligences I've dealt with that were non-corporeal also. And they've got this love type of frequency coming off them too. But it's different. It's different, if that makes sense to you. Anyway, but that accident and the near-death experience is actually what got me to talk, and I got found out about that. And people started talking to me in my state and some other places, and very interested in it, and I started communicating with some people that were experiencers too, contactees, and that kind of just got me to come forward, and here we are talking now. I don't want to skip over too much, but I want to over-talk what you guys might want to interject.
Okay, this is Dr. John. Well, hey, Matt, I've got a preliminary question. I don't want to forget it, and okay. then I'll hit you, and then Kyler, and then we'll go back to Barry. Barry, you talked about, again, those three or four planets past Pluto. We have all heard about Nibiru, that giant planet outside of Pluto's orbit that somehow gets near enough the Earth and causes terrible problems. Did you hear of any giant planets with strange orbits like that? Now, we've had Marshall Masters on our show three times, and he is convinced that Nibiru is real. And I don't know. I mean, it's in the Sumerian, it's somewhat in the Sumerian literature. But do you have any opinions or any knowledge of that?
Yeah, I've got some opinions. I don't believe that those planets out there are Nibiru, based on the orbit and what they say the orbit of Nibiru supposedly was. Now, what I will say is that based on the evidence of how they have these odd orbits, these trans-Neptunian objects, that it appears like there could possibly be a brown dwarf out there. And if there's a brown dwarf out there, that makes this a binary solar system. And, you know, you hear so much right now, people saying, oh, the sun's not real, it's solar simulator, and it goes really far out. But scientifically speaking, we could be in a brown dwarf in a binary solar system. So how much that might to do with Nibiru is interesting, you know, because I think that just from my limited knowledge, the gravitational perturbance that we're seeing in our solar system doesn't really give for Nibiru the way we're hearing. When I ask people about that, they say, oh, well, Barry, it's because it's a ship and it moves orbit and it changes. And hey, that could be true. I don't know. But I'm a little questionable of Planet Nine, so to speak.
Okay. I was just wondering, I mean, you know, but if that is a brown dwarf that is orbiting even that far around our sun, then we're in a binary star system. And there's, you know, there's no telling what is going on, because that brown dwarf might have planets, for lack of a better term, orbiting around it.
Very true.
Would you say that there's a possibility that we're in a binary star system?
Definitely. I think we're seeing a lot of signs of that. And just dealing with our sun alone, you know, people, I would advise people to always go check out the SOHO website, the NASA SOHO website, which observes our sun continuously and takes pictures, like, what is it, every 3 minutes, I think, or something? And you can get on there and actually get on the arc.
Now, Now, hold on. What is the domain name for that?
Googled. SOHO, S-O-H-O telescope. Just Google that, and it should take you to the SOHO website itself. And on
Thank you. No, that's great.
No,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. When on that website, please check out the archives. It's a little difficult to navigate because it's real scientific. But if you go to the archives, you'll find that also the SOHO monitors the sun in several different spectrums also. So not just our spectrum, but several. And you can look at all those archives. And on several times, you can find frames where you see around our sun what appear like ships going in and out of it, especially sometimes what appear to be the coronal holes, the spots. I've always believed that those actually are Bohr portals in our sun that advanced civilizations use. And when you start talking about what Michikako and everybody calls the advanced civilizations, type 0 through like type 5, you know, when you get to us, type 0, using fossil fuels as your power source, but when you get to actually types 4 and 5, they're actually using the fabric of space or the fabrics of black holes themselves as their prime power source. So that takes us into using suns and things like that. You know, we so often hear people saying, oh, nothing's helping us. They won't help us. But when you get on the SOHO and you can find, even on YouTube, you can find some of these people that have found clips because the archives are so big. But you have these solar flares that appear to be Earth-directed, and you've got these very large spherical things that are blocking it, or these cubical things. There's some sort of biosatellite, some sort of craft. And if you can see it like that, that would put it probably about double the size of Jupiter, whatever that is. So these things need to be really taken into account. So we talk about Nibiru, that a craft that size, something like that they're talking about, there is activity like that around our sun that can be seen with the instruments we have pointed that way. Anyway, so sorry, I didn't mean to go too far on that.
Okay, and I know that's all speculation, but it's very interesting to hear you say that because I'm extremely interested in that particular topic. All right, Matt, you had a question, and then we'll go to Tyler. So, Matt, what's your question?
Yeah. Okay, well, I was going to say, just to add to what he was talking about with the sun, he's talking about with the portals and stuff, and that makes a lot of sense, actually, because you've got to have so much high energy to open a portal. And, like solar flares, stuff like that, with the magnetic field here on Earth, it makes sense there with the sun. But you're missing time. One thing that I'm trying to get our team set up with out in the field is where we have missing time with have you ever been under hypnotized to try and bring back some of that missing time so you can remember, bring back some of the anything like that, any type of hypnotherapy or anything?
Oh, two great statements, my friend. Yeah. You're one of the most interesting people I've ever met, my friend. Anyway, two things. One thing is we're talking about the sun, too, just real quick I'll throw in. In the magnetic fields, between the magnetic fields of the sun and the Earth at the points they intersect, there are these things called electron diffusion regions. And what those are these natural portals, like these doors that open up between the magnetic fields. And it's like every so many minutes they open up. So any civilization that's advanced would be utilized that and utilizing the time-like curves and all the things that a planet generates itself, like with that inertial drag frame. Anyway, back to the other part of your question. I just want to throw that in there because that's crucial. I think
so
people look that up and find out, wow. Sorry,
the polar
that?
Cusp would be one of those inner and exit points, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
up in Antarctica.
Several times, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there's a whole lot of things going on there dimensionally too.
Yes.
What the inner earth actually is. Concerning hypnosis, I'll be honest. I went through a phase of my life when I was against that because I studied hypnosis, but I was like on this trip that, well, I'm not like Betty and Barney Hill. I'm not like Travis Walton. I didn't just get knocked out the whole time, and I was conscious. I can remember. But the truth is, when really evaluating what I could remember, with all the hours of missing time I had, it was fragmented, and it was like a sliver of what must have happened, you know? So I started studying hypnosis a lot, and even got a certification for other things for a long time, and I did that strictly to try to hypnotize myself to recover these missing memories from this missing time. And, you know, I found I was a good hypnotist on other people, but I couldn't hypnotize myself. Not for that, and I couldn't meditate and bring it back either. That was frustrating. So eventually my butt had to go sit with another hypnotist and sit there and lay there and been regressed. And as much as I thought I knew, okay, the first regression alone, so much information came out of it that I was shocked. And that led to me having 7 professional regressions for this missing time and for these encounters. And, you know, it was one of the best things I could have did. So I really want to emphasize to anyone listening to us now, please, if you've had these encounters or you suspect it, even if you've seen a UFO and you were sitting there watching it for a minute or two and nobody else could seem to see it, look, it's right there, it's right there. You may have got information on the subconscious and superconscious level. And when you go under hypnosis, you can access that. Our subconscious and superconscious records everything in the theta and delta state. So please don't let anybody discourage you if you're missing time saying, oh, no, what happens? Whatever happens, don't get hypnosis. Don't look into that. Don't do that. Don't allow them to control if you choose to explore your consciousness or not. It's not their choice.
Right.
And, you know, I've got to say something. When you were talking, you brought up the fact that your subconscious, you know, we are normally bombarded with about 2 billion pieces of information a second. And I've got my book called Program Your Brain that I'm working on, and it should be out here by January. We talk about the reticular activating system, and it would be interesting to find out how or where do those bits of information go that are filtered out by the reticular activating system. I don't know. Are you familiar with that part of the brainstem? I just am, because I'm interested in putting this book together. Do you know much about that?
Only slightly. I took a hematoma there, so I was more interested in like how they connect with the hippocampus and actually the frontal lobe and how it regulates emotions. It's kind of where I was at with that. Now,
not right. Well, that's okay. But you've given me some ideas and some things to research. That's really great. So thank you very much. And now, Kyler,
what, something else?
Just a minute.
We'll talk later. I got something else about the brain you might find very interesting, and it does connect to these contact experiences.
Sounds like we'll be talking off
the brain and black holes. Yeah, okay, sorry.
Okay.
I actually I wanted to go circle back to I think the word you used was insectoid, and I have never heard that before. So would you dive a little deeper into that and when the last time you saw him was?
Sure. Insectoid, there's several species of insectoids that are starting to gain notoriety in the media now. I think the foremost one would be the praying mantis type, or mantids, and they look like large praying mantis, humanoid size, or even bigger. Some contactees have reported them being as big as, you know, 10, 15. And you know, interestingly enough, I took interest in a lot of these praying mantis of that size. People say that they see light being emitted from the mouth area and from their heads. And sometimes these beings are telling them, well, what we do is we seed solar systems, and then we supervise from there. And it's very interesting when you start thinking of things like the Uranta book and what they call life carriers, what actually is the things that inhabit, that actually spawns life on all the solar systems and on the planets. And it makes you think, is that simply panspermia, or is it also some type of a humanoid that does it too? And if so, what all evolution cycles do they go on the soul level for different bodies or containers of consciousness? Anyway, so praying mantis is a big one that comes up a lot. The insectoid that I had interacted with, Yandar, Sandar, he looked like a grasshopper, okay? And when I say this, he did not look like a mantid. He did not have the long arms or anything like that. He had physical proportions that were similar to what when I was a kid. He was a smaller being, but physically the proportions were more like that. But his skin was a light green, and his eyes were this type of a light, almost milky colored, looked like almost milky. There you go, gray, milkyish color, and no antenna either. And, you know, when this individual, when I see it on the craft, this is the same individual that was playing with me, trying to stop the water from running down the curb. And so I thought he was a kid at first, but I saw him then, and I knew immediately this was someone that felt not just like a scientist, but ancient, very ancient, you know. So that's insectoid there. And there are other types of insectoids. There's another that has gained notoriety just recently called the trantaloids. And I think Linda Moulton Howe and Earth Files, they talk about that a little bit. But that's supposedly a hostile species that came here is trying to wipe us out. And are very just a hostile species that might look like some type of a beetle or something, a large beetle, something similar. So I've encountered other non-physicals that felt somewhat insectoid also. And quickly, I think that is because when you actually start speeding vibrations up, I think that it becomes an insectoid type of feel to it. And I even based that on kind of something like an old Star Trek with William Shatner, where they beam down this planet, and they think there's a fly down there, and they beam back up, and he said, "We beam something up with us, and it's this fly, this buzzing." And then it winds up, his coffee gets stirred, and he's actually, everybody slows down. And this woman walks up to him and says, "Oh, I enjoyed kissing you before you knew I was here." And what she had done is said that their vibration was so many hundreds of times faster than people, normal people, and normal, everything standing still. And he left a message for Spock on one of those, I guess that was a data tape, and saying they have to destroy this device. And when Spock is trying to watch it, it's just this like a buzz sound on there, like an insect. He slows it down hundreds of times, and there's Kirk on it, telling him to slow. So I think when we start speeding up our vibration, we might become insectoid-like vibrationally. Food for thought.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. So then this being, and I believe he gave you a name too. Did you ever try reaching back out to him?
You know, he was on several different craft. I saw him several times, actually. And they were interesting because certain beings stepped forward when I was young, and then they stepped back, and then others come forward. And he's one that stepped back. And I didn't encounter again, you know, after my 20s, mid-20s, I never had encountered him again, except for the feeling, you know, but I never have actually physically seen him on board a craft. But, you know, just from 28 on, my experience has stopped being quite as physical like that. It changed to being more, you know, inner knowing. I don't want to call it channeling, really, but it's just an open frequency that they have. They come through, you know, or even through the dream state sometimes.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
You sure? Okay. It sounded like maybe I didn't. And sometimes I tend to go left.
No, I was.
So if I don't, just bring me back.
No.
Reel me back in.
my mind was going straight to, you know, how I would be reacting as a kid if I saw something like this, and I don't know if I'd be freaking out or just having the time of my life. Because if I saw that right now, I feel like it'd be awesome. You know, I'd want to hang out with them all the time. But you never know. That's really cool.
Well, you know, Tyler, one thing I'll say is that for me, since it was weird because on these ships, they would be, some of these beings would be kind of transparent. Okay. So I they're doing what they do and I'm moving around, but I'm so sick, I'm not much of a threat. But, you know, to me, it felt a lot like at the same age when you go on a field trip. And when you go on a field trip, I was one of those kids you didn't want to be around because I was always going, what's that? What's this? What's that? And I would run off with the group. You know what I mean? And then it'd stop everything. Where's Barry? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's, it felt a lot like that to me. And I'll say something else that I think that we should touch on here is that the experiences themselves, how can I say this? Like, there's something that they can do that they can actually bi-locate. They use a bi-location type of technology, which can put us in two places at once. And when I say that, you know, we have the dream body, the astral body, as people call it, and then we've got the physical body. And the dream body doesn't conform to the same physical parameters that this physical body does. So when I was, the first experience I had adult onset at 17, I woke up on board this craft. And what's interesting is that I'm by this type of an engine thing. It looks like a spherical, I call it the gyrospherical engine. I think actually it was a brain. But it's generating a golden light that is coming up the thing. It's going up this column. And these are decks. I can see this deck up here. I can see what looks like some people touching this light that's coming up this column. And so I get up there. You know, it's weird. Those weird things. You want to go somewhere in this craft, and suddenly you're just there. And then, so then there comes this triple aphasia. And when I say that, it's really strong to where I'm about to throw up, okay? And, you know, I didn't make the association till I got older why I hated merry-go-rounds so much. Because this temporal aphasia feels a lot like that, like being on a merry-go-round and you get off sitting and your stomach's gone. Yeah, and then you've got them bombarding you mentally, also psychically, you know. And so that's another thing. Anyway, so these people, though, that are touching this living light, there's a group of them, but some people, and interestingly enough, three of them I've now met in my normal life. Okay, but they're transparent, but they're going and touching this living light coming back. So they're having this astral dream experience, and they're not there about to check their 50s like me. So when people talk about, you know, dream and astral experiences, I don't dismiss it, because a lot of this is going down like that, and even through the imagination itself. And something else I want to say, just to finish up what you're saying, Tyler, if that's your name, right?
Right, yeah, you got it.
Okay, sorry. Is that the craft itself, another reason I'm moving around is these craft I were on were all organic to a degree. They've got large organic components in terms of like mycelium, fungus, and things like that. And so this craft, and this is a space organism, okay, that is probably, who knows, thousands of years old or older, who knows. And it also has access to our soul life memories when you're on board. Not just the race memory, but the soul memory, soul life memories, which is odd because a lot of people will agree that we're, to some degree, immortal souls, but yet when we incarnate here on Earth, we're devoid of soul life memories. That's like being in the 12th grade and saying, oh, you can't remember kindergarten to the 11th grade. What kind of crap is that? And that's, you know, so you may have incarnated here hundreds of times, been unaware of it, let alone where you've incarnated galactically. Real quickly, I want to bring this into the brain thing. These Makos, black holes, I had a couple of astrophysicists that took interest in my experiences. One of them was Rudy Shields, and he was the advance on black hole research in the observatories. And, you know, they were finding that these things, they actually call them Makos, magnetically turning, collapsing objects. And they're finding that actually the way they operate is a lot like brain waves. And when dealing with that, we have these brain waves that are what are called conscious waves, that they say come from the Creator, that are spherical and helical. And within our bodies, we have these things called microtubules. And for this conversation, we'll relegate this to brain microtubules, which also form the mirror neuron network. which is more than just the grab and reflex thing. But the mirror neurons also me telling you these stories is how you're seeing it with me right now and living it. And when dealing with these makos, these black holes, they're not what we're being told. When something goes into the black hole, okay, this mako inside of it actually makes a copy. So what's going into the black hole, an exact copy is made on the surface that they call the quantum hologram. And then the quantum hologram starts wrapping around this mako and looks similar to the accretion disk. Okay? So in reality, what these black holes are is not what I was told when I was a kid. There was a movie called The Black Hole. Everything gets sucked in. In reality, they're the hard drives of the universe. And we hear so much about the Akashic Records. First time I heard that was from Edgar Casey. But what are they really? The records of space and time. Well, I've just described it. It's these makos, these black holes, these information wrapping around the mako, around the accretion disk, the whole universe, the history of the universe. And so in that way, these type 4, type 5 civilizations we were just talking about, some of them may no longer be in existence anymore. But they were using these mako as their prime power source. So in that way, they will still exist in the Akashic Records and can be accessed by us consciously. You know, so for that, and the microtubules of the brain occur in two ways, in two ways, spherical and helical. So we can actually process that information. And when dealing with the makos and the black holes, how will we get there, actually? It's by the speed of thought, which people like Rudy Shields were telling me they estimated is, from certain experiments, is about 100,000 times the speed of light. So that's just food for thought when how we're dealing with the Akashic Records and some of these beings and civilizations that are no longer in existence, but they still exist within the quantum hologram, and they interact with our brain in that way through the divine field. So that's heavy, and it's things that I think we need to be aware of, and especially when dealing with microorganisms that are craft that can choose one of these makos, go through them. You know, the craft I just described to you that was changing in the sky that I saw, I know more what it was doing now. What it was it was preparing, it was changing its configuration and doing a pattern of unfoldment for its destination, whatever universe it was going to through this mako. And, you know, that's really heavy because I was forced by these scientists to deal with these beings I was dealing with weren't just from another galaxy, some of them from another universe. I kept saying, no, it's another galaxy. They said this and that. And they're saying, Barry, that's cool, but mathematically what you're saying isn't holding up. It's another universe, and that goes beyond me. So anyway, just food for thought. I'm trying to kind of bring this together because Spirit's telling me to, so I'm hoping I'm not jumping around too much. But concerning the craft, Tyler, the sentientness of it, the way it was sentient and alive, that was an experience to itself, and that makes it extremely exciting. And it takes us away from all this just being the nuts and bolts thing. This is way beyond that. And I can only speak from my experiences. Mine were all positive, okay? I wasn't one. I didn't see reptilians. I didn't see grays, no probes. I wasn't being experimented on. And I'll be real with you, 100. The fact that I did not see a 9-foot bipedal crocodile on one of these craft, hey, I'm cool with that.
This is Dr. John. That would have been scary as hell, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, interestingly enough, I dealt with a gentleman, Ray Hernandez. He did something called CCRA behind Edgar Casey, or Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. And, you know, they did this great survey for thousands of experiencers all over the world, and the results are not all what you think you would see as far as negative versus positive contact. There are a lot of people that have positive contact like me. I mean, it still messes up your life a little because you can't think of nothing else. But it's better than be experimented on and things like that. And I think these are things that need to be really addressed for us to move into a type 1 civilization, where we're part of the galactic trade routes and everything Gene Roddenberry was trying to show us, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, this is extremely interesting. It really is. I've got so many questions that, first of all, Barry, would you be okay if Matt fires your number at me after the show? I need to talk to you about a couple of these things. Some of them are germane to the new book I've got, Programming Your Brain, and some are just germane to some other things. And you're definitely someone I want to invite on to Scarycast Monday, which is the original show. This is kind of like the new show. It's kind of interesting because it's me and Matt and Kyler. But we've got a surgeon, a psychic, a Hollywood comedian, and Kyler on the Monday night show. And I would love for you to talk to Cray. She is our Bigfoot experiencer and our UFO experiencer. She is renowned throughout the world, to be honest with you. She used to be engaged to Igor Berchtesgadov, the great Russian Bigfoot researcher. And Robin is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. And Matt, I think you'll agree with me, won't you?
Yeah. They're all good people.
Well, you know, I'm aware of who she is. And I'll tell you something I really like about her is that she brings the credibility to the mind speak. And when I had my Sasquatch experiences, when I was invited to speak at the Yosemite Ranch in 2016, 2017, and 2019, I'll tell you, fellas, I'm not a young man, okay? And I thought that I was past the point where I have these encounters that just stop my world. I went out there and my world got stopped. And I heavy mind speak out there.
You know what's really interesting about mind speak is I met Robin 5 years ago when she was trying to book Igor at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference that I run. And it was like, you know, I called her at like 11:30 at night, and we talked till like 3 in the morning. And I've learned so much from Robin about mind speak. She and I have an essay. I'll get you a copy of it. It's kind of a fun essay to read. I like it, and I need to just put that one up on the internet on Scarycast so that everybody can read it. It's fun, and it talks about. I mean, I do it quite a bit, and I don't know if you do. You do a lot of mind speak. First of all, that's my first part of this little question here.
Yeah, I have it, you know, because I'm a medium, so I get a lot of times off earthbound spirits, they'll communicate with me. Sometimes the extraterrestrials will do it too, and so I do this happen, but not quite.
Right.
The mind speak I got from whatever that was at that ranch was a little bit different, though, and I don't mind telling you that it was a little bit overwhelming, and whatever that was a much stronger telepath than I promise you. And it wasn't
well,
a lucky man, that either.
what I wanted to mention to you, this is a little bit of an involved question. First of all, in my book, Look Up in the Sky, third edition, the top story, it's kind of like a revolving, how can I put it? It's like a revolving psychic, you know, paranormal newspaper, is the Sydney Monsters. And I was told by the local historian that the lady that experienced the Sydney Monsters, which seemed to be something between a Bigfoot and an alien, okay, is that she said that she could hear them in her head when she was taking a shower and when she was driving, okay? That's what Richard Wright, the local attorney and historian, told me, all right? And I mentioned this to Robin because I tell Robin everything because she's like, you know, what a heck of a resource she is. And so Robin says to me, well, yeah, it's because you're moving through space and time when you're in a car. And now the water thing, it has to do with water. She said, I'm not sure about that, but I can tell you that when you're moving through space and time, when you're driving, you can get all kinds of vibes. Now, here's my comment, Barry. I get the most amazing mind speak experiences when I am driving my car. And I had one today. it said, John, you need to do this. And it's the most amazing, perfect piece of advice I've ever gotten. I have talked to spirits. I have talked to Mozart. I have talked to Freddie Mercury. I've talked to amazing people when I am driving. Now, does that line up with anything that you know about? There's my question.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting. Well, what it would be, to my knowledge, is that perhaps when you're driving or driving, we can very easily kind of slip into a light alpha state. And when we're in that alpha state, much more information can come through. You know, we're having the heightened awareness start getting touched at that point. And it's so interesting because even at a point where I can have somebody in hypnosis so deep in theta, I mean, they're almost a delta, which is they can almost be unresponsive. They're completely like, you know, about to be what you call a flopper, which is fall off the chair or the recliner or whatever it is. And then you bring them back, and they take 5 minutes, 10 minutes to merge them, and they look at you, oh, it didn't work. You know. So I think it happens so light, especially when we're driving, and you have the scenery, you have the sound of the machinery and everything else. I think that maybe you're slipping into alpha a lot, and you're picking up this type of communication, you know. And in that way, it is like we're going through these radio frequencies all the time. And then you're just tuning your knob. That's kind of my take on it anyway. Doesn't mean it's correct, but I'll be honest, that's interesting.
Well,
I've not heard before the amount of telepathy during driving. I think that's fine.
Barry, I want to say something about what you just said. That's my take on it. It may not be correct, but that's my take. You know what? We all have different takes. We're not expert scientists, but we really do, and I think you really do research as much as I do, correct?
Yeah, I try to know how many beads to five.
We do the best we can, and the best we can is probably not so bad. I'll never forget when I was sitting there during the moon landing, and Neil Armstrong was talking back and forth to Houston Mission Control. Now, I don't know how old you are, but do you remember that?
No, I don't. What year would that have been? That would have been what?
Okay. There was a time during the mission on the moon that Neil Armstrong was talking in real time with Houston Mission Control, like you and I are talking in real time. Okay? You see? Do you understand what I'm saying? Right?
Yeah. Actually, I'm familiar with what you're talking about now. I mean, I've been alive,
okay.
But you mean when
right,
he's saying
right,
things
right.
Like our friends are up here and all that stuff?
Well, okay, so I looked at my dad, and I said, Dad, something's wrong here because you can't talk back and forth 250,000 miles away in real time. And my dad, who was in the Army, and he was an aircraft mechanic in Burma, which is now Myanmar. And he looked at me, he said, son, I don't know, but now that you've mentioned it, there's something wrong with this. Because I don't know how you can talk 250,000 miles in real time. And that conversation stuck with me forever. Well, it turns out I have I have a shortwave radio license, okay? That's the best way to put it. And so I'm sitting there with the local shortwave club, and I said, what kind of delay would there be between the moon and the earth? And they said, oh, 10 to 15 seconds. I said, so there would be a real delay between the moon and the earth. And then I said, and this was the kicker, I said, what would happen if you were on the other side of the earth away from the moon? Oh, you couldn't get it because it's line of sight. I said, okay. I started laughing. I said, okay. So if you're on the other side of the earth from the moon, you know what I mean? You know, if the moon is not on your side of the earth, then you wouldn't get it because it's line of sight communication. And I thought, And they kept doing this at all hours of the day and night. Now, I believe, okay, Barry, I'm sorry, you somehow brought up a topic in my brain that I am fast and furious about. I believe we have gone to the moon, but until we had digital technology to do it, we could not have gone to the moon with analog technology. I have a PhD in computer science, and I know that there are some things that you have to do in terms of navigation and everything that you cannot do with analog technology. You cannot do it. And I never hear anybody say that. And then all these skeptics want to get around and they start talking. They don't know it. There's not a skeptic. There's no one that's a skeptic that knows a damn thing. And I'm sorry. And I'm in defense of everybody, you, me, Matt, Tyler, Robin, Dr. Trey Dunaway, Devin Tate. I am in defense of every one of us that talks about the paranormal. And these people sit there and bash us, and they don't know what in the world they're talking about. All right, I'm going to get off my soapbox. Okay, and I'm going to ask you to comment, and then I'm going to go back to Matt and Kyler, because this is two questions. But would you please, please comment about what I just said?
Okay. Okay.
I hope I didn't box you in a corner, because
No.
Oh my goodness.
Here's the problem I have. I think that we've been lied to so much about the moon missions that it's unreal. You know, and certain things stand out to me. For starters, I was always very interested in the work of Richard Hoagland. And he seemed to be somebody that, I don't know if it was health problems or what, or he seemed to got shut up a little bit. Are you familiar with his work?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
so that was.
Do me a favor. Give sure. Everybody a 90-second Richard Hoagland, okay?
Okay. I got hip to him back in the 90s listening on Art Bell. He worked for NASA for a while, and I think the Jet Propulsion Laboratory also. And he wrote a book called Dark Mission.
He worked at JPL out in Berkeley, California. Okay.
And he when he was saying that NASA was covering all these things up, especially about the lunar landings and the lunar missions, and then he started producing these pictures that were of the dark side, and he had something that they called the palace. Also, the shard that was supposed to be so many miles above the lunar surface, I think it was 11 miles or something like that, 6 miles, some number, and these different anomalies on the dark side of the moon. And for me, it really did something. It resonated because when I was a kid and when I started being able to ride my bike to the library, you know, I would be guided to stuff. And I remember being guided to two books. One of them was called Somebody Else Is on the Moon. By I think it's Raymond Moody was the guy's name, I think. But it was called Somebody Else Is on the Moon. And the guy said...
Okay. By the way, it was not Ray Moody, because Ray Moody did the stuff about afterlife and visions. It was another... You're correct. It was a guy with a similar name, but Raymond Moody, Dr. Raymond Moody, is actually someone that I know, and I met him at the Ryan Institute, and he did all the talk, unless... Raymond Moody did some energy work and did some remote, which he might have.
I was incorrect. The guy's name is George Leonard. George Leonard. Somebody else is on the moon. I apologize. Yeah. But anyway, on there he's got all these pictures of things that he says are machines and different things on the moon. And for me, it correlated a lot with what Richard Hoagland was talking about. And fast-forwarding that, I come across the book Penetration by Ingo Swann.
Sir, I have sent that book, a PDF copy of it, to about 100 different people. I think that is the most revolutionary book ever written. Oh, my God. I'm so glad that you mentioned Penetration. I was hoping you would. That's great.
Right on. You know, the way he went about that, too, and as the quote-unquote father remote viewing, that isn't what they called it then, but, you know, he thought he was looking at Las Vegas, right? A city in Las Vegas. He didn't know exactly where we were. In Nevada, I'm sorry. A city in Nevada that he thought he was looking at. It was actually somewhere on the moon. I mean, that was just a fascinating deal, and I've since come into contact with people that have done remote viewing, and one of them, like John Pavinko, he worked for the government for a while, and he said when he branched out on his own, he remote viewed the moon, and he got a visit and was told not to do that anymore. And the amount of people like Ingo Swann that say they're looking at the moon and that the beings on there are seeing them remote viewing, they're aware of them. I think that's just fascinating. Well, and some of the other things,
I'm going to interrupt you. Then I guess I better get you a copy of my book, Look Up in the Sky, because Robin McRae remote viewed the moon and she paralleled what Ingo Swann saw. And she doesn't know who Ingo Swann is. And you know, Ingo Swann is somebody that I learned about from Joe McMonagle. You know who Joe is, right?
No, I don't.
He's the grandfather of the Stargate Project, and he worked with Ingo Swann, and he told me right out of his mouth when I was having breakfast with him that Ingo Swann was the greatest remote viewer in history, and I believed it, and Joe proved to me that Joe is one of the greatest psychics of all time. We have to talk. This is great. So anyway, I'm sorry.
I'm curious what you think about TRAPPIST-1. What do you think about TRAPPIST-1? What do they got? Six planets there in the Goldilocks zone. I've heard some remote viewers talk about that place. It's fascinating, you know.
Here's the deal. I am going to plead the fifth until I go see Robin, and I'll ask her to remote view it, and she'll stand there in her kitchen while she's making cookies, and she'll remote view it. I mean, you've never seen anything like this magnificent woman that can remote view while she's making cookies or cooking turkey and dressing. You've never seen anything like this. I promise you haven't. I'm sorry. You'd love it. All right.
One last thing I want to say about the moon, though. When dealing with what used to be the Free Foundation, the Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation, it's now called CCRI, but, you know, he put out a book that was about how they actually, the astronauts, were trained to remote view before they went to the moon, and they remote viewed when they got there. He talks about that. That's stuff we never hear about. You know?
No. Where do I get a copy of the book?
Hold on. Let me I'll tell you the name of it.
Well, I tell you what. That's another one of those offline questions, okay?
Okay. The name of the book is The Quantum Hologram and ESP, and it's by Edgar Mitchell.
Okay. The Quantum Hologram and ESP. All right. We'll talk about that later. All right. Matt Delf, question. You're up, and then Kyler, and then this magnificent madness will cease. But it's been pretty good. And by the way, I've got to say thanks, MyrtleBeachNetwork.com. Enjoy it, and more scary cast like you've never seen. We got tonight an incredible guest, Barry Littleton. Okay, Matt, your question.
All righty. Yeah, the whole moon thing, that's all questionable of. They're the plasma trying to send signals through the plasma, radio signals. And, of course, you know, everything else. And supposedly that the moon wasn't even there so many years ago. I forget what race of ancient people said that it was. They talked about before the moon came.
It was 16,000 years ago, actually, Matt, the end of the ice age.
So these people talked about the moon not being there. Ancient race, and before the moon. So, but yeah, the whole, I could go on and on about the moon. But I guess my question is, Barry, you've gotten into the whole Bigfoot stuff now, and have you had any more experiences with, like, the Bigfoot or anything like that coming to you telepathically or, like, physical sightings, or has it drawn you in more now?
Man, you would ask me that, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to throw me on Front Street here. Oh, Matt Dell. Okay. yeah. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Barry. Barry, he would ask you that question, wouldn't he?
it's okay. For one, is this okay? When I had my experiences at this ranch, I think that I got hit with some type of infrasound or some type of sound they use, and I think they mark you. It's like, I think it's like almost like you're christened or something by them. I don't know exactly. You know, this night they were howling at me like these owls. They're owls. Then I tried to shine a flashlight. I know now you don't do that. So I got a rock thrown at me. I mean, well, they didn't hit me. They could have, but they didn't, you know. But I know now certain things you don't do. But it's like they – and then the whole things with the communications I was doing with them, it did something. So I went to another conference later, just before COVID hit, in New Orleans. And I've never been to New Orleans. And this place was about probably 45 miles outside of New Orleans, and it was a little swampy there, this little retreat thing. And, you know, I keep picking up skunk ape stuff out there, just picking this up, coming to mind. I start roaming around on one of the abandoned buildings out there, and I start finding signs, stuff like tree bark stuck in these trees and, like, stuck up on there that somebody did this on, just odd things, okay? Definitely communication. And then this is my answer to your question, okay? I have to deal with this. God, you would put me in this situation. Okay, in the middle of the city where I live, okay, I live in the middle of the city, I go in my backyard. This was actually about a month ago, and there's tree structures back there. And when I say that, the ones that are like something stuck, they're stuck up, they're broken, and they're definite signs. A few of them in my backyard. And I've had some things happen that definitely make me think that not just do they use portals, but they are truly shapeshifters. And we're dealing with a people. And, you know, when they talk about, like, you know, the Patty video, if you look at that, I think MK Davis breaks it down too. You know, she's got what looks like a braid, and not the braid that we were talking about on the horse's neck.
right.
That's not the witch knot. Another reason I like you. You're the first person to back me up on that besides Tom Powell. I almost got bricks thrown at me for talking about stop watching the witch knot. Oh, man. Anyway, these were different in just these communications. It's so bizarre. But we start dealing with actually what is shape shifting and the type of different tribes. You had shamans that were known to do that. I think that's what we're dealing with, and how it's not acknowledged that Sasquatch is definitely not just a monkey or something, and the paranormal amount of stuff that comes with these beings. You know, when I got – one thing I would ask Robin McRae, because when I got my telepathy, the mind speak from this thing out at that ranch, one is it overpowered me, okay, as far as telepathy. And because I was – I'll be honest, I was tripped out, man, all right? I don't sleep at night, and I'm out there looking at this mountain, Mount Adams, to see UFOs going off of it. There's nobody out there. I feel like I'm being watched from the trees. I feel like these things are all over. They're just on me out there. You know, they've howled at me several times. I'm walking down to my yurt, and I just turned off my flashlight, and I threw it out telepathically. I said, look, I'm from the Midwest. I say I want to have an experience, but that was just talk. And the truth is, if one of y'all are 12 feet tall and you come out of the bushes on me, I'm going to freak out, so just don't do it. And I said this telepathically, and I said it out loud, my friend. And I went and sat down in this yurt, and I started getting this mind speak. And the first thing comes through is I'm hearing words. I'm not just seeing the telethought pictures and feeling the emotions, I'm getting words, English. And it's saying, don't worry, it's against the law for us to really be seen by y'all anyway. And you could call me Elder. And now before I went to this ranch, one, I was hesitant to go out there. I was unaware of how remote this place really was. But I was just obsessing about albino Sasquatch, white Sasquatch, to the point I looked up everything, Faker Thunder to MK Davis, you name it. I was Whitey's Run. I was on it, all of it. And then I get out to this ranch, and as soon as I get to the gate, I was feeling like I'm being watched. Then this yurt I'm staying at, I'm having the trees being pushed over in the back, and all these weird stuff start happening. The conference is over. I've got a river lava stone set on my doorstep vertically. I mean, it was such a trip, what they were doing, how they were communicating. So just suffice to say it, that I had experience with a squirrel that I think was one of them. I know that sounds weird, but I'm sure that they have some sort of a paranormal aspect to them that people are not acknowledging. Will the Native Americans say they're a tribe that needs to be acknowledged? There's so many reports of Sasquatch swimming, the braid that Patty had, and these other things, and whatever it was communicating with me. That's all I'd ask Robin McRae. And I've heard some people in the Bigfoot community saying, well, you don't know that it was Sasquatch. So that's true, I don't. But I'll tell you, whatever it was doing a damn good imitation. And it's going to be, and you know, one of the things that comes through is that I don't have a limp. And I'm getting this, and then in my mind, and don't laugh at me, I'm going to tell you really what I saw. I saw this, like, 12-foot albino Sasquatch doing a backflip. And when I say that, there was a video by Van Halen called Jump, and at the very end of that video, David Lee Roth does a backflip for, like, no reason at all. You know what I'm talking about, Machef?
Yep, I know.
Yeah, it looked like that in my mind's eye, okay? And then I find out later when listening to Jake Meldrum and some other people, they're talking about the really large tracks of Sasquatch, like 20 inches plus, and maybe even like what I think MK Davis and the Parrish Habitation were calling Tall Paul. And when they get that tall, they tend to have this limp, and it's seen in the footprints. They have this limp. So I think that might imply that some of them grow until they die. But that's what I think he was communicating, you know. I mean, yeah, so the communications still happen. I had the tree structures, but I feel also like they're there, man. Like they're like with me or something weird's going on. That's all I can tell you. You threw me on the spot for that, but I can tell you. But how the heck that came in my backyard, in the middle of the city, unless they're dealing with portals and shape-shifting both, there's just no way. There's no way. And nobody knows me well enough what happened to me to go in my backyard and try to play a trick like that on me. Very dangerous.
Wow.
Right.
Sorry. Does that answer your question, man? Sorry, it's weird. A weird answer, but it's the only one I got for you.
No, it's not weird. Not to me.
That's just amazing. We want to get Kyler in before we end. And here, I need to ask you something, Barry. I'll see if I can get Robin McRae on next week with us, next Tuesday night. Would you join us if I do?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
She's like my sister, and I listen. I talk to her every day, and I spend Thanksgiving with her and Pat. I mean, they're like some of the best friends I've ever had. And I'm going to tell her that I've got a fan of hers, and Robin is truly, and Matt will tell you, she's one of the nicest people in the world. And let me see what I can do. So we want to schedule you next week here on ScaryCast Tuesday. Thanks for agreeing. And Kyler, you get the last question before I wrap this thing up and send it off into the sunset with Captain Kirk.
Hey, one quick question before she goes. Hey, is Robin McRae also Snow White Bigfoot? Is that the same person?
Is she what?
Snow White Bigfoot? You know what I'm talking about on YouTube? The the lady that has all that activity on her property and does all the gifting and everything. Snow White, but
I'll tell you something. I have seen that activity. I don't know that she's got that's her YouTube channel, but I have seen that stuff, man. I mean, it's unbelievable, and I've seen it with witnesses. It's the most unbelievable stuff in the world, and I'll tell you about it next week on ScaryCast Tuesday with her right there, okay?
Cool. Thank you.
Okay, all right. Kyler, you get the last question to wrap up tonight.
Well, I had a question. I'm not sure where it went because there was so much being covered. I was being thrown in circles and trying to absorb everything, and it's like, you know, I had a question that I got excited about something else you said, and then it completely threw me off. And then I got excited about something else, and I went a different direction. But I guess I'll just say that every time we have a new guest on here, I'm just mind blown because it's crazy how much is going on in this world and universe that no one has any freaking clue about, and that we can't even, like, I don't want to say access, but, like, we can barely touch it. And it's just right there in front of our faces. It's amazing to me.
Hey, thanks for saying that. That means it kept you interested. So thank you.
Oh, the whole time. Yeah, I've just been sitting here like, Jesus Christ.
And you know what's interesting is it seems like the more you get into it and the more questions you have, you start realizing that you think you're chasing the phenomenon, but it's like really it's chasing you. And it probably always has been. You know, it's strange how things aren't at all the different classifications that we think they are, you know?
Oh, that actually reminds me. Okay, so yeah, the psychotherapy you guys were talking about earlier, you said sometimes it will bring up certain experiences that you've had that you can't actually remember, but it'll come out and you'll be able to see it or remember it again. Because actually yesterday we were talking with Robin about an experience that she was told that I had when I was a kid and I couldn't remember them. So now I'm curious if that's something that's possible to go do and maybe I'll remember and figure out what it was.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. You know, and when saying that, excuse me, it gets this serious too. I deal with past life regressions too, as well as encounter experiences and stuff like that. But, you know, in the past life regressions, you would be truly shocked. Even you might not be doing specifically a past life regression, but how often one of the traumas that people hold in their organs, you know, that's been shown scientifically even that we harbor certain traumas in certain negative emotions and in certain organs, that you'll find that some of these traumas in these organs are actually from a past life. And the person is reincarnated and they're having the same problem, the same addiction or the same habit that they had in this past life that was a trauma related, or it's causing a problem in one of their organs and it's coming from this other lifetime. And my friend, I can't begin to tell you what an issue that deals with in therapy when people don't even want to admit, our society doesn't want to admit we have past lives. You know, and I do also a lot of crossing over of earthbound spirits. And these are ones that are, as a medium, I can see the ones normally that are at least get information from the ones that are on the outside of a person's energy field or just attached. They'll step forward and give sometimes survival evidence that will allow me to give the information to the person that they're attached to, whatever the message is. But then there are these others that are inside a person's energy field, and they only express themselves as negative patterns. And these are behavior patterns. And these are earthbound spirits that don't cross over for a multitude of reasons. It could be addictions, property, a person. And sometimes we say, oh, please don't go. When one of our loved ones passes, be careful with that because they'll stay. They'll become earthbound. our ability to actually not go into the light and not proceed on in evolution is very strong. We do have a free will. But anyway, these earthbound spirits that are inside the energy field of people, it's really a trip, you know, and they also latch on to the places and join with people on the places that their organs are storing negative trauma, whether from this lifetime or another, but they'll join with the person on those locations. So, you know, these are things that, and I'm not even talking about the demonic level here. I'm talking about like mom and dad or grandma that didn't cross over for a number of reasons. And, you know, I think maybe before I shut up, there's the movie Ghost I bring up as a reference. In that movie, at the beginning, he's walking out of the movies, and he gets in the fight with the thug, and the gun goes off, and he chases after the gun, the thug, and then he gets away, and he runs back to, he starts walking back to his body, and he sees Demi Moore's holding his body, and he starts tripping out. He goes through a panic rifle review, and then the lights start coming out of the guy.
Excuse me. Are you talking about my favorite film, The Sixth Sense?
No, I'm talking about Ghost. The movie was
You said Demi Moore.
The lights start coming towards him, he looks at the light. He goes, "What is this?" And he looks back at his body. He looks at the light. He starts going, "No, no!" And he starts running towards his body. And the light stays on for a second, then it goes out. I cannot begin to tell you how many earthbounds have described that to me, or something quite similar, saying, "I got cheated. I was only 18. I wasn't ready to die, and then I died, and this light came, so I ran away. I went in the field, and it finally went out, or I got away from it. I didn't know what it was." You know, a lot of things like that, or something else I hear a lot. You know, I dogged a lot of people out. I was very rude to people. I hurt people, and I think that light might be hell. I might go in there and burn. So these are all things that will stop people from crossing over, but in dealing with this work, I can tell you that the amount of earthbound spirits on this planet, I think, is more numerous than the living. And that's frightening. Major problem.
Well,
all that answering questions about things up, you have access to all that, especially you get a decent hypnotist that knows how to actually get through any screen memories or any of the blocks and actually access and bring the information through. It's in there, and you can get it, you can access it, and it's your right to do so. So I would say yes, definitely. And don't be afraid to do it, my friend. Go for it. You know, just find a good hypnotist that you can trust and knows what they're doing.
Absolutely.
All right, well, I tell you what, Barry, this has been absolutely amazing. This has been one of the best ScaryCast Tuesdays we've ever had. We got 1 minute left before the British lady cuts us off, and so look forward to having you next week. I'll do my best to get Robin. I think she will, but if she doesn't, we still got to continue this conversation. And Matt Delf, thank you for bringing Barry to us. Kyler, thanks for your great questions. We've had a wonderful time. Now, Barry, does Matt Delf have your permission to text me your phone number?
Yes, if he has it. If he does not, I'll make sure he gets it from Jessica. Yes, absolutely.
I want to clarify a couple things and get you on ScaryCast Monday with Dr. Trey Donaway and Robin McRae and Kyler and Devin Tate. It's going to be absolutely wonderful. So I wanted to say thank you to everybody, and Myrtle Beach Network is signing off for tonight with ScaryCast Tuesday. We'll see everybody next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll be back with Barry Littleton. With 10 seconds left, the British lady is calling. Have a good one. Take care. Bye-bye. See you next week.
Good night.